This is The Country Hour with Angus Firley on ABC Radio.
G'day and welcome to The Country Hour. Today we'll be jumping around the state talking about fires in various parts of Victoria. We'll be heading to Ruffey. We'll be talking to the CFA captain from the Talangata Valley. We'll be going to that fire at Dargo. And we'll be going to the northwest and talking about the fire that's been burning in the Big Desert and Wiperfeld National Park. You can get in touch on the text line 0467 842 722, or you can give me a call 1300 977 222. And it will be a long road to recovery for those communities affected by fire. In the Strathbogie Ranges, the township of Ruffey, home to just under 200 residents, has obviously been hit extremely hard, with many of those residents losing their homes. And in the past few days, there has been a mission to distribute hay to the livestock that survived. Annie Brown went to Ruffey and spoke to some of the town's residents in the centre of town where hay was being dropped off yesterday.
Hi, I'm Colleen Filinetto. I'm a fifth generation of Ruffey. We have property just out of, in the township here. We didn't have any stock. We've lost fencing, etc. Our little house that no one was there to defend and we didn't expect it to be has been just something that survived for no rhyme or reason. It should have gone, it didn't. So we're very, very lucky. I am just here as someone working with Elders, Nutrien and Rodwells around the hay coordination for up here at Ruffey. And we're getting our main depot down in Longwood and getting volunteers driving their trucks, coming up and just doing circles and circles of what is a really difficult ride up the Longwood-Ruffey road. And for the most hardened, it's really difficult. But how do you prepare to see what we're going to see? But I've my family members, uncles and aunties and very dear friends that have lost their homes, it just puts life into perspective that we don't fully appreciate how quickly fire will move. And we all talk about, you know, what, every 10 years there'll be a cycle of fire. This is like nothing ever before. So how do you prepare for it? But I do think that we can learn from it and always tweak things. And I think we've got a lot of opportunity here to, from this tragedy, to not lose the learnings to ensure that let's make it two generations that it might skip and not have another generation have to have this trauma. But I think really the locals that have going like ever-ready batteries, I think should be just so held so highly. But batteries don't last forever and we need to make sure we've got, you know, the charges there to come in and ensure that the confidence is there that others can take the reins for a bit and people can have a bit of a rest. This is a long recovery. We will need a lot more hay and we will need a lot more goodwill, a lot more dog food. That seems to be a great donation that people are giving, dog food.
What's it been like sitting here? So you're sort of at like a little man-made depot, right, for people to come pick up hay and take it out to their properties. What's it been like sort of sitting here and seeing people come through?
It's been pretty hard when you're related to most of the people and not haven't seen them for the first time since the fire. So they're coming in and you're just like, all right, I've got this hat on at the moment. But you have to hug them and you have to hold them and they're holding you and you're like, oh, I really should be writing something down. This is my job to be coordinating, but what do you do? So for me, it's been extremely emotional, but I think it's been an element of trust to have some local faces supporting the local people and local businesses being at the forefront of that as well as the volunteers.
Joel Craven, been born in Euroa, bred in Euroa, so I work over at Murchison on a family farm, and then mum and dad have country in Crichton's Creek, and then dad's whole family was up from Terrip, Ruffey, So Dad knows it like the back of his hand. I don't. I'm sort of learning. So, yeah, just I know the locals, know the people. It's devastating to see the places you sort of knew when you were kids run around. So,
has your family lost property or, you know, assets, stuff like that?
Nah, so we were one of the lucky ones. Mum and we were sort of fighting two houses at once. So my brother and his partner come very, very close to that one on the Mansfield Road. And then Mum and Dad's, yeah, yesterday we were pretty nervous. If it was going to come over that flank, we knew, yeah, she's on. So, but yeah, very extremely lucky. Luckier than other people, unfortunately. But yeah.
And tell us about what you've been up to today. You've got your trailer and your Land Cruiser. It's filled to the brim with hay.
Yeah. Oh, sitting at home, sort of seeing it all around you. Yeah, it kills you sitting there, seeing and hearing about it. And yeah, you don't want to be a sticky nose, but you don't, that doesn't come through your head when you think of it. You want to hop in, help out. Just anything you can, hook up, load as many as you can. You get more and more each time you come back for a load. And yeah, just seeing the places you know and people you know, like you go up to them and you don't even want to say, how you going? Like you don't know how to greet them. Mm. Just seeing the looks on their face and the impression, you're just like far out. It's hitting home a bit. But yeah, that's just the worst part. Just locally, not just, yeah, can't sit still, let alone. So I couldn't sit still seeing everything around us.
Well, Joel, thanks for having a chat with us. There's another truck coming in with an excavator on the back of it, just watching it come around the corner.
Yeah, that's my brother, actually.
There you go. You're all out helping.
Yeah, we're all out helping, all hands on deck. Yeah, just keep your head up high. That's all you can do. Sort of, you see the greedy, like you hear the greedy people, but you sort of can't even think of that. You're here to help out. You're not here to take money or take a pat on the back. You don't need appreciation. You just got to help out where you can.
How often have we heard that attitude? That was Joel Craven speaking with Annie Brown, and earlier you heard from Colleen Furlanetto. 12 past 12 on the Country Hour, and like so many volunteers, Tolangata Valley Fire Brigade Captain Clint Reed has barely been home since the fires started almost a week ago. And while he was out fighting the blaze on other properties, fire wiped out more than 90% of his farm. I spoke with him this morning about what the past week has been like.
Started to receive a few phone calls from friends within departments that, you know, said it was going to start head towards your way. And you could see it building. Yeah, by sort of midnight that night, it had burst out, and within about 20 minutes, it burnt most of Left Hand Road. All the farms up there would topped it pretty severely. When I say pretty severely, very severely, and then it's worked its way through the valley on the left-hand side looking up, and there's been some significant land loss throughout the valley from there. But at this stage, we're trying to reduce land that's getting burnt.
And right now, Clint, is the fire still spreading?
Last past few days, we've been very lucky enough to be able to work in with Deka and CFA and a huge amount of support from local crews, local private crews, and we've been able to maintain an edge so it's not spreading out into the cleared land quite as severely at the moment, which we're quite pleased about.
And Clint, your own impact for your family's farm, what's happened there?
We've probably lost 95% of our property. And we lost a bit of some stock and some fodder and whatnot, but there's plenty of people that have copped it as bad, if not worse, as us. But we're grateful that we've come out with our houses, and I suppose the main one, their families, all are pretty. We're safe, so that's the main thing for us.
Clint, as CFA captain, I know you've been flat out on the fire truck. Have you been able to be at your property much?
Unfortunately, I've probably only spent 2 or 3 hours at home out of the total last 5 or 6 days. So, yeah, no, I haven't. But my brother and some and family friends and the community have rallied behind and helped me out. So it's been good.
How have you managed that? Because no doubt it's weighing on your mind what has been going on at home, and when you're not there and you're confronting fires wherever you've been.
I don't know. I suppose community comes first. It's probably something I'm probably big on. But I've been lucky, like I said, I've had some amazing friends who have been there and helped out and, you know, jumped in, done what they possibly could to help out where they could and fed cattle. And the Unthank brothers from Ryan Unthank in town have been quite amazing finding adjustment and sending people out to help. So, you know, like, we've battled through. It's, it plays on your mind. It sits in your mind all day. But got a job to do, so I've got to try and maintain it for the better of what goes forward.
How much sleep have you had in the past week?
I wouldn't say a hell of a lot. enough to get by. Enough to get by.
And you are getting by okay?
Yep. As I said, we've been very lucky that within the community, a lot of people have given a lot of time and sacrificed a lot of effort that probably don't have a hell of a lot of land or don't have a huge connection to the area have jumped in. So when those guys are jumping in doing what they're doing, it makes it sort of a hell of a lot easier, but also sort of wills you to keep going to want to do a good job.
And feed for livestock, Clint, for you guys and for everyone else who've lost pretty much everything. What are you doing? Have you got hay coming into the area? Have you got sheep and cattle going out on adjustment?
Both. There's been an incredible amount of influx of people wanting to donate hay and fodder. You know, people that probably can't afford it themselves are, you know, willing to give up tucker to help out. So, you know, what we've done there is we've put one particular person in charge of M&N Curvis so that it gets shared out fairly and to the people that need it. And everyone will need a bit of help. And just meant people are jumping up offering paddocks and short-term adjustment, and you know it's the kindness is quite amazing actually.
And Clint, fencing, I mean, even if you had feed in paddocks, there's going to be a massive amount of fencing or fences that will need to be replaced.
Yeah, there will be, but you know fencing can be always fixed, and this means you've got to put your head down your ass up and get into it when all this finishes off.
And Clint, for the sheep and cattle that have been injured in the fires and need to be put down, that must be a job that's weighing pretty heavy on people.
Yeah, it's not a fantastic part of it. It's probably quite sad when you see the animals suffering. So, we've been some pretty good people come out from veterinary clinics to put their best foot forward to help out and do it humanely and take the pressure off the owners. Yeah, so, you know, the generosity is quite amazing as well.
And the days ahead, Clint, I know they're talking some storms and potentially some lightning and some stronger winds in the next couple of days. I guess you'll all be on high alert.
Unfortunately, probably not what we just need at the moment, but we can't change the weather coming, but let's just hope it plays fair for a bit and we just get a bit of rain to help out without the lightning.
That was Clint Reed, a farmer in the Tolangata Valley and captain of the Tolangata Valley Fire Brigade. Barely been home since those fires started last week. On the text line, someone asking a good question about what's the best number to contact for hay donations. Now, there are lots of different organisations coordinating hay, so it probably depends a little bit where you are in Victoria. But I'll give you the VFF number because the VFF is coordinating fodder donations and deliveries statewide. So that number, if you've got a pen handy, it's 1300 882 833, and that is on the VFF website as well.
On air, online and on the ABC Listen app, it's the Country Hour with Angus Verley from ABC Radio.
Let's head to Gippsland's high country now, where a fire in the Alpine National Park west of Dargo has grown to more than 48,000 hectares. Authorities estimate the fire has a perimeter of more than 400 kilometres, and more than 170 firefighters and aircraft are working to contain it. Michael Sweeney is a local cattle producer and CFA member. He spoke with Emma Field.
It started with lightning strikes way up the top of the Wanangatta Valley. And they just did what they did for a couple of days, and then when we got all that hot weather, they, flared up and took off down the Wanagatta Valley.
I understand there's been a house lost at Wanagatta, is that right?
As far as I know, there's been a house lost, yes.
And so what? There's a lot of people that have been working on it, so what have you been doing to that fire to try and, you know, contain it?
They didn't really do a lot on those hot days because it was just too dangerous to be in there. But since the days have cooled off a bit, they've got a lot of machinery on it. Helicopters, there's probably a couple hundred Delwop crews up here. So they're hitting it pretty hard with dozers and machinery, just trying to contain it in this cooler weather.
What was it like on that Friday when the winds were really high?
It was pretty hectic, actually. It wasn't that close to Dargo at the time, but then it apparently, from what the crews have said, it travelled 57 kilometres in one day. In the afternoon, the skies just turned black and blue, and it was pretty eerie for a while, so yeah.
The authorities have told us that the perimeter that you've got around that fire at the moment is about 400 kilometres. I mean, that's just huge. So what are your concerns if it heats up and you get some more winds in that your patch?
For Dargo Township itself, I honestly think it's, unless we get a westerly wind, we're probably not too bad. It's more heading down towards Castleburn, Cobinar, sort of in the Bensdale direction, more so than us. But in saying that, it's, as the crow flies, it's only probably 6 to 7 kilometres from town if it really did arc up.
And whereabouts is your property in relation to the fire at the moment?
Our property's sort of on the eastern sort of side of Dargo, so we're sort of, it's probably 8 or 9 k's from where the fire would be in a straight line, I suppose.
So fire authorities and CFA are going to have to monitor this fire for potentially months, do you think, or...?
Yeah, there's a fair chance because, as you know, the area is just so huge where it is and it's so remote. The chances of them actually getting containment lines probably around the whole fire is, it could take months. And then there'll be a lot of blacking out and stuff in the middle just trying to get things down. But hopefully this rain that we're supposedly supposed to get in the next couple of days should die a lot of it down.
The native forest logging industry was shut down. Is there enough equipment to help with that task of putting perimeters around and all the sort of bushwork that you have to do when there's a big fire in the bush like this?
Look, we've got a lot of machinery up here, but it's mostly come from earth-moving companies and that, which, look, they're good operators, but they're not the bushmen or the logging crews and that, which some of them older blokes that were loggers all their life, they lived, breathed dozers, and where they wouldn't go, you wouldn't walk just about. So I think that's our biggest loss, is we've lost the experience.
Is there anything else you want us to know about the fire up there, Michael?
No, just it'd be nice to get as a bit of recognition, because it's a very big fire, and we sort of haven't got hardly any coverage of anything. Or I know the other fires are very dangerous and taking a lot of homes and stuff out, but yeah, a bit more recognition up this way to be by someone or some people would be good.
That was Dargo farmer Michael Sweeney talking about that Alpine National Park fire, and there is still a watch and act in place for Dargo and surrounding communities. People in those areas are urged to monitor conditions and be ready to act. 24 past 12 on the Country Hour, and for fruit growers, it is going to be a long road ahead for those who've lost their permanent plantings. Michael Crescera is Grower Services Manager with Fruit Growers Victoria. I spoke with him about the fruit-growing regions impacted by fire.
Yeah, so two regions in particular have been impacted. Obviously Harcourt, where there is some apple orchards, and also the Coolstore that's been impacted, and then also the Yarrawea, sort of in south of Cobham, a grass fire has also impacted some of the stone fruit and cherry growers in that region.
And, Michael, it probably just highlights how badly Victoria has been hit by fires that I think a lot of people might not even be aware of. That Cobram fire, it may have been lost in the thick of things.
Yeah, I think so. I think, people don't realise what sort of... It was quite a large grass fire that really got out of control quite quickly with, obviously, the conditions we had. And, there's been some damage to stone fruit orchards up that way and potentially, I think, a cherry orchard as well.
And obviously different for different fruit, but where are we at in the growing season? Have there been crops that were just about to be harvested that have been lost?
Yeah, well, stone fruit, sort of, that's a peak time at this time of year for stone fruit in that Cobram Yarra Weir area. And then also Harcourt, it's not sort of that close to harvest. It's sort of mid-growing period and getting close for gala apples, but I suspect the majority of the fruit impacted at Harcourt would have been pink lady apples, which we don't harvest for a while. But, yeah, there's definitely been some work in getting those trees to where they are now and to have them lost like this. And an issue with permanent plantings is when you get impacted by bushfires, it can take, you know, anywhere between 3 and 5 years to get those trees back into full production. That's whether you cut them back and get them to grow again or whether you totally remove it and replant.
Okay, so still assessments to be done, but some of those trees, there might be hope for them?
Potentially, yeah. So, unfortunately, there's been some historical events in other regions through that black summer fires in 2019, 2020 up at Batlow and Lenswood where they've had bushfire impacted orchards, and so there's been some findings and sort of some studies done on the impact of the different types of fires. So there are some learnings there that the growers, if they need to look at some resources, there's definitely some resources online from Batlow and Lenswood if they have a look at some of the bushfire impacts online. So it just really depends on what type of what type of damage they got, whether it's radiant heat or whether the fire's ripped through the farm.
And I imagine, Michael, for those orchards that are irrigated, that'll be the other problem, that the irrigation systems would be ruined as well.
Correct, and that's sort of the key thing we've found with a lot of the growers in Harcourt, especially looking to try and I think they haven't had power since Friday, so they're trying to get in generators to get their pumps going to look after the crop that's not been affected, you know. And I imagine that's the case in Cobram and Yarra Weir as well, you know, just making sure that the irrigation hasn't been impacted immediately near the tree. So there'll be a lot of work going in there at the moment to try and get that irrigation repaired.
Okay, so it's going, as you said, going to be a long road ahead.
Correct, yeah, it will be a long road ahead. Look, the thing we encourage, get in there, try and fix what you've got, you know, what crop you've got left, and then we'll look at assessments. You know, towards the end of this week, we'll probably get a better picture of the total amount of trees and hectares being impacted. But we're still sort of collating that. You know, we're mindful as well. People are still, trying to come to grips with what's happened and trying to get themselves, immediate sort of support. I think there's going to be some longer-term support needed for these guys to get them back up, to be without production for a large amount of hectares or even a small amount of hectares, it can take quite a long time and really impact these guys quite badly, financially.
That was Michael Crissera, Grower Services Manager with Fruit Growers Victoria.
You're with Angus Furley and the Country Hour on ABC Radio.
A Patchawalloc farmer has criticised the management of public land to reduce the impact of bushfires after the fire in the Wiperfeld National Park has burnt almost 60,000 hectares. Simon Grigg says there is no fuel reduction burning done in the park, meaning that large-scale fires are inevitable. I spoke with him today.
Yeah, well, last Friday there was a lightning strike that we think that started at right in the northwest corner of the Big Desert, which at Bowinka, and that fire got hold and it just went like crazy, as we all know the conditions on Friday. And it was heading in a southerly direction with a strong north wind, so we weren't too worried, but when the wind changed, that's when it took out most of the Pine Plains part of Wiperfeld National Park, and also it came into my property and also my neighbour's property.
Okay, so the fire is largely contained to scrub, but it has gone on to private property as well.
Certainly came into private property, yep. I was very fortunate that it came into the paddock where I had lentils, so it didn't burn that well. They were able to contain it. It took out 3 or 4 k's of fencing and trees that were in the paddock. And we're still monitoring it now because those trees are still hot. yeah, very, very, very lucky, and nothing compared to what's been happening in other areas, that's for sure.
And that's the thing, usually a fire of that scale would be making headlines, but as you say, with what's happened in other parts of Victoria, that hasn't been the case.
No, and it's devastating, you know, not on my property, but Pine Plains, you know, with it's been part of the local history and entertainment and valued for the close community for, you know, forever. Once upon a time, my cousins used to lease that country. They had cattle and sheep out there, and there was always fires out there, but they were always contained. They were always little fires, little grass fires, and they were always able to be contained, whereas now they just lock it up for 10 years, and then every 10 years it just burns to the ground, and it's just devastating what's happened this time because it's taken probably 80% of the park. And all the big trees, you know, the Balar and the Box and the river gums and, you know, all the wildlife, the mallee fowl, the kangaroos, the habitat for the birds, it's just all gone. And it's just ridiculous. It's a joke. It's just decimated the place, and it's just so sad.
The lodge itself and the home at the lodge, are they okay?
Yeah, look, it's probably the closest a fire has ever got to the property, to the private property that is in the middle of the park, in the middle of Pine Plains. It was probably within 50 to 100 metres of the lodge and the other little, the house down the hill, it was probably 5 metres, and just extremely lucky that they didn't go up.
Now, you talked about the park now being locked up. Is there any planned burning being done, or when was the last time there was planned burning in the park?
Zero. No, it's absolutely zero. There is no fire prevention in the park. The state forest have prevention measures. They do they chain around the edge of private property, and it does a fantastic job. But once you get into national park, there is zero fire prevention.
So for people who aren't familiar, there's the Big Desert State Forest right next door to the Wiperfeld National Park. So you're saying there is some fire prevention work done for the state forest, but nothing for the national park?
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. We're talking 60,000 plus hectares have been burnt. Well, there's 70,000 acres in Pine Plains, which is the national park. Well, what's that, 25,000 odd hectares? So, you know, half is the park and half has been state forest. But the state forest, yes, they do management measures, but the national parks do absolutely nothing. And they just lock it up. And the end result is, sooner or later, it has to burn. And it could be so easily controlled if they, because, you know, there's big, vast areas of open country, just grassland. It could be so easily just have cool burns in the spring, in the autumn, to maintain the grass levels, and you would not get these devastating fires. It's, you know, they bang on about climate change, man-made climate change and whatever. Well, if that was true, don't you think that they would be putting more resources into fire management if they're going to be become worse? But they're not doing any.
And have you heard a rationale from authorities as to why there is that difference, why there is fire prevention done in the state forest but not in the national park?
Well, we're talking different bodies of influence and control, and naturally the national parks, it's more based from Canberra, and they refuse to listen. They do come, we do have meetings at certain times, and they agree with what we say, but they do nothing about it. So I don't know why there is a difference of opinion and procedures from the state government and the federal government.
Do you think now, after we've had across Victoria more than 1 million acres burnt and a lot of that bushland and public land, do you think now there might be a change in approach?
No, I do not.
You're pretty frustrated, or more than frustrated, Simon. You're pretty angry.
I'm very, very angry, and common sense doesn't come from Canberra, we know that, and the votes don't come from the bush, so what hope have we got?
That was patchawalloc farmer Simon Grigg, and that topic about whether the CFA is adequately resourced, but also as well what Simon was talking about, whether there is enough fuel reduction burning done on public land. We will be delving into that in a lot more detail tomorrow, so tune into the Country Hour for that then.
This is the Country Hour with Angus Firley on ABC Radio.
Let's get a weather update now. Daniel Sherwin-Simpson, Senior Forecaster at the Weather Bureau, joins you. G'day, Daniel.
Good afternoon, Angus.
Daniel, we'll talk about the weather that we've got coming in the next couple of days, but first up, what's it looking like today?
Yeah, so at the moment, at least things are fairly settled. We've got a bit of a deck of low cloud across the south of the state, and obviously that's smoke haze, particularly in the northeast of the state, up around places like Wangaratta and Wodonga and through the Alpine Ranges. So that smoke's obviously going to linger around a bit, but we should start to see it sort of flush out of the valleys a little into the afternoon. We haven't seen much shower activity yet, but it is possible that we start to see showers pick up in the eastern parts of the state through Gippsland, noting a possibility of even seeing some severe thunderstorms right around sort of the eastern New South Wales border. So you think sort of from Corryong down to Omeo, then all the way across to like Gabo Island, sort of north towards the New South Wales border. In that area, we could see some storms kicking off. In fact, a few have even just popped up sort of in the New South Wales area, so they might creep over in the next couple of hours. But tomorrow's probably the real interesting weather day. That slight chance of storms this afternoon becomes more broad across the state. Probably the only place we're not expecting any storms is the northwest of the state tomorrow. Could see a couple of isolated storms in the southwest and far north of the state, but they become more likely over central districts, but really the eastern districts is where you need to worry about. If you sort of think from about Wodonga through to Wangaratta, down through Mansfield to Warrigal, and then all the way down to Wilson's Prom, anywhere east of that, we could be seeing severe storms tomorrow, and they really become likely sort of in that Mount Hotham, Omeo, Mount Baw-Baw, Bairnsdale out to Genoa kind of area. We could be seeing some pretty significant rainfall totals out there with storms that could even lead to some localised flash flooding. Possibly even some large hail and damaging winds with those storms. So if you're out in those eastern parts of the state, particularly through East Gippsland or about the southern side of the ranges, you definitely need to be watching out for those storms and any warnings that come out tomorrow. In terms of the rainfall totals we could expect out of this, broadly across Gippsland, 20 to 50 millimetres is what's on the cards for tomorrow's, and we could even see some isolated totals starting to nudge up into, you know, the 80s, 90s. Not out of the question that we see something get near 100 millimetres in the 24 hours, so there is going to be some significant rainfall, particularly through Gippsland tomorrow. In terms of what that means for the fires, Angus, probably the Walmer and the Longwood fires won't see a lot of that rainfall, but the Dargo fire could pick up a couple of, along with some of those smaller fires in Gippsland. The fires down in the southwest through the Otways, it looks like there's going to be quite a bit of rainfall through the Otways, but it probably won't push over the hills as much, so it's a question whether that'll help out. But the Surf Coast could also be another fairly wet spot tomorrow as well, Angus.
Okay, well, the rain's good, we'll take that, but that area you're talking about, that's right where the Walwa fire is, and then it sounds like pretty windy around the Dargo fire as well, so that's going to be pretty treacherous conditions for those fire grounds.
Yeah, I guess the Walwa fire is slightly just in the rain shadow of that, so it's probably looking like broadly totals up there will be maybe more in the sort of 2 to 10 millimetres, possibly getting up to 15 with a couple of storms. So, you know, it's some decent rainfall, but probably not enough to put out that fire up there. And then also with this significant amount of rainfall on sort of the burnt ground that we've seen in some places, particularly up near that kind of National Alpine park fire near Dargo, that could lead to some landslips with this really intense rainfall, localised flash flooding, as I mentioned. We're expecting a bit more rain in that area on Friday as well, so we've got our hydrologists on the job. It's not out of the question that we could see a couple of minor flood warnings for places like the Snowy, possibly the Mitchell River, through Friday and into the weekend. So, yeah, keep an eye out on your sort of flood warnings for catchments out in the east of the state, as well as any thunderstorm warnings popping up, particularly tomorrow. I think tomorrow's going to be a pretty wet day, going to be the most rainfall people have seen in quite a while if you're in the eastern parts of the state.
Okay, so in the space of a week, potentially from fire to flood.
Yeah, that's I guess how Victorian weather works at this time of year. We flip-flop around, and then, you know, at least once we sort of get past this rainfall, once we get through to Saturday, broadly across the entire state, we're looking at more settled conditions developing. The west will still generally be pretty settled over the whole week, but yeah, that east is particularly of concern over the next few days. But we do really settle out, go to, you know, mostly sunny days, a little bit of cloud across the south, and no specific weather hazards into the new week. So at least things ease off by the weekend and into the new week, Angus.
We will eagerly await that. Thanks, Daniel.
Cheers, thank you.
Daniel Sherwin-Simpson there from the Weather Bureau. So yeah, very, very substantial rainfall totals in East Gippsland particularly. Some rain for the Dargo fire as well, but not much up in the northeast by the sound of it. Quickly on the text line before we move on, Phil at Collignan in the northwest says there was a fire that started at a horticulture property and spotted over a kilometre into Rackagillum, our conservation property, then burnt south into Hattacolkine National Park, 941 hectares. We had 170 hectares burnt, including multi-century-old black box and 4 kilometres of electric fence. But we still have our house and our health, and we count ourselves lucky. And there are people worse off than us. Thanks, Phil. And yeah, usually a fire like that would generate a significant amount of attention. But in these circumstances, some of these smaller fires have sort of flown under the radar. 19:21 on the Country Hour. And we will now move away from fire coverage, but stay on emergency situations and head to Queensland, because floodwaters are continuing to recede in northwest Queensland, draining into the Gulf Country or to Lake Eyre. The Queensland Department of Primary Industries says at their current count, there are more than 51,000 missing or dead livestock, more than 2,000 kilometres of fencing destroyed, and 3,600 kilometres of private roads damaged. Patrick Hick, a grazier at Argyle Station near Julia Creek, says he's expecting a significant number of livestock losses at his property.
The sun is out, so the ground is drying out a bit, which is just letting cattle get up on top of the ground and travel a bit. We're still getting losses from pneumonia. We've lost quite a lot of cattle to pneumonia, and that's ongoing, but it's starting to slow down a little bit, but certainly cattle are still very knocked around. We've been spending quite a bit of time up until yesterday just pushing cattle into their watering troughs and making sure they're getting out, getting a feed, getting a drink, which they were sort of not doing for themselves. I guess they were a bit shocked from the event. So we've been doing that, just basic animal husbandry. But it is getting a little bit better every day for us. There are plenty of people still in the on the river proper who are still in the thick of it, and the peak has not passed them yet, and they've got cattle standing around in deep water and trying to keep them alive. So we're past the worst of it, but there are plenty of people who are not. The flood peak is still moving downstream, and it's got a long way to go. And while I'm saying that things are getting better for us, there are other people out there who the worst is yet to hit them.
It is early days, and it's hard to predict, but what sort of percentage of cattle loss are you predicting for you guys?
Oh, look, it really is early days, Abby. Until we muster, we're almost guessing. I mean, it's significant, and I can tell from flying around that we're going to be well north of 1,000 head of branded cattle, but other than that, I can't tell you much, really.
How do you think that you and your community are feeling at the moment?
Well, there's probably two things going on there. There's the sort of the shock and grief, the distress of seeing your livestock die around you is extremely hard to go through, and that's sort of, at the moment, that's what most people are going through. They're not thinking about the financial consequences yet. It's just the distress of seeing your livestock die around you. That's the low point. The high point is the amazing job that our community has done doing what they can to save livestock, and it is so uplifting to see what people have done and the resourcefulness of people, it's quite amazing. We always knew we had a good community, but gee, it is really, the message is really rammed home to us in these sort of events.
What is some of the community support that you've seen around you?
Well, we basically had a little group of volunteers in Julie Creek, and it's not even a little group, there's quite a few people who just took it upon themselves to start organising, coordinating hay drops, helicopters, sourcing fuel. There's a lot of work that goes into dropping hay to cattle. The hay's got to be sourced, it's got to be stockpiled, it's got to be unwrapped, loaded into helicopters, it's got to be unwrapped, it's got to be unhooked at the other end. Often it's got to be loaded on another truck and carted to a more central point. Fuel's got to be sourced. Drums of fuel have got to be manhandled and shifted. Pilots have got to be fed and housed. There's a lot that goes into it. And the fact that we have a group of people in Julia Creek, not only with the will to do it, but also the know-how and the organising capacity to make it happen off their own bat. So by the time we started to want to feed cattle, we had people in Julia Creek who basically already had the resources lined up, ready to go. It was just a matter of where do you want this hay to go, and it's on its way.
That must be a pretty heartwarming feeling to know that you were, you know, supported by so many people in your community.
Better than heartwarming. Yeah, uplifting. We knew we had a good community, but we know it for sure now.
And how does it feel to see the sun in the sky again and to know that the rain's slowing down and it's probably looking like that you might avoid some of this extra that's coming from the tropical low?
Oh, look, it's just relief to see the blue sky, which obviously we spend a fair bit of our time looking skywards, hoping that we're going to get rain, but we all understand that there's too much, and we just, for the sake of our livestock, we just wanted it to end.
That was Patrick Hick, a grazier at Argyle Station near Julia Creek. He was speaking with Abby Holter.
Keeping you updated, this is The Country Hour with Angus Verley on ABC Radio.
Let's now talk about something that isn't related to fires and isn't related to floods, because one of the highest peaks in the world of record shearing has been conquered, with New Zealander Simon Goss shearing 732 strongwool ewes in 9 hours. His tally broke the existing record held by Matt Smith for a decade by just one sheep, setting a benchmark that's going to be hard to beat. It's actually Goss's second world record after he joined forces with Jamie Skiffington to shear 1,410 strongwool lambs in 9 hours back in 2023. He says it's an honour to join the list of renowned shearers to have previously held the 9-hour strongwool ewe record.
To be honest, I don't think it's quite set in just yet. Yeah, it's hard to put into words when you start looking at the names, you know, the previous record holders, you know, have got their names on that list. Like, there's some absolute legends there, you know, the likes of, you know, Matt Smith himself, Rodney Sutton, Darren Ford, David Fagan. To then now have my name sitting next to theirs is something that will probably take a wee while to really sink in.
And to break the record by one sheep, that means you were grabbing your last sheep with literally seconds to spare. Do you think back throughout the day and think, geez, if I'd been 5 seconds slower there or 3 seconds slower there, then you wouldn't have broken the record?
On the day, no, I didn't think that at all. But thinking about it now, like the last run, like, it was pretty, like, even though it looked tight at the end, but, like, we still grabbed the last sheep. I think I might have had 40-odd seconds to go. So in record senses, that's actually heaps of time. But if you look back in the previous runs, I think I grabbed the first sheep with 4 or 5 seconds to go, and I think it might even have been the third run I grabbed my last sheep with not even a second left to go. So, you know, that's probably where the record was broken, but, you know, without even knowing it. So, yeah, on the day, didn't think of it at all. It was just the process, and we still had to shear the whole day out. But yeah, thinking about it now, you definitely look back at those little key moments that, you know, we were able to take.
Is it more difficult to shear a big tally under those very rigorous, strict record conditions where every sheep is scrutinised to make sure it's shorn to a particular standard?
Definitely. With, you know, people standing over you pretty much all day, you know, making sure everything's up to scratch, there's a lot of pressure on that side of it. Whereas I think it might have been a couple of years ago, I was lucky enough to do a shed tally. My boss at the time, and he'd set it up where we crutched out some ewes, so they weren't up to record standards, so they didn't have the 3 kilos of wool, and the crutching on their bum was a lot bigger and stuff like that. And I saw 804 ewes in the 9-hour period, so which was, you know, it's a few more than the actual record. But because there wasn't any judges and, you know, there wasn't all the spectators, and it was sort of more relaxed, and, you know, we're able to, you know, move things on pretty quick. But then on the record side of it, like, yeah, there's a lot of pressure with the judges, the 3 kilos of wool, the small bum crutch on the sheep, you know, everything's got to be right. And it is definitely tougher, and it puts a lot of strain on, you know, the mental side of things.
The 9-hour workday, Simon, that's a bit of a foreign concept for us in Australia. How often would you work a 9-hour day typically?
A couple of seasons ago, it would have been a good 3 years solid, I worked for a contractor, Jeff Dorset in Rotorua, and that's pretty much his sole workday. Every day is just 9 hours. So, yeah, for 3 years, I pretty much did 9-hour days every day of the year, pretty much. Whereas in the last 2 years, I've moved on to down into Dannevirke working for Rod Sutton. And for Rod, I think we only do a couple of 9-hour days a year just on certain sheds, whereas, you know, everything else with the 8-hour day starting at 7, finishing at 5.
Simon, your family's a pretty well known name in the industry, isn't it? Both your mum, your dad, your sister.
Yeah, mum was a top wool handler. She, throughout New Zealand, she was one of the best, really, and even in the world, she was. Was it 2014? She travelled to Ireland with the New Zealand team and was lucky enough to be second in the world. So, you know, she was pretty up there. And she travelled to Aussie many times with the Trans-Tasman team, and she won a few tests and stuff like that. And Dad, he'll take it. He wasn't really a good shearer, but in my eyes, he was pretty good. Yeah, so that, like, you know, they were in the industry earlier on, and you know, gave us a good stepping forward, like, into the industry, and let us know what can be achieved if you put a bit of effort in and put your work towards what you want to do. And then, yeah, obviously my sister, she's shore as well, and, you know, she'd gone away from shearing now. I don't think she's touched a sheep in a while, but yeah, she's in the rugby side of things. She's, yeah, doing her thing at the moment.
And Simon, on the preparation, I guess in general, shearers are known for working hard and playing hard after hours, but I'm sure that hasn't been the case for you in the lead up to this.
Nah, not at all. Yeah, what was it? I think I stopped, like, all alcohol was before, what was that, back in August. No alcohol, no partying or anything like that. So, which, yeah, to me, it's, you know, I do enjoy a few beverages every now and again, but, you know, these last couple of years, it's sort of been this record has been on the back of my mind, and just been ticking along and ticking boxes for it. So it's been definitely been working towards it.
And Simon, you're still young. I think you're only 29. Have you got more record attempts in your sights?
I'd like to think so, but, you know, a lot of effort goes into these things with, you know, just us personally. You know, my partner, she's poured a lot of time and effort into organising everything for this. And then, you know, my old man, he's been, you know, right behind us doing everything with the sheep. And, you know, it takes a lot of manpower, a lot of effort, and even a lot of money to sort these things out and get them up and running and going. And, you know, I'd like to think we would, but as time goes on, things change. And, you know, if the opportunity arises and I'm lucky enough to be in a position to have another crack at a record, I'd love to. But, you know, as life is life, it, you know, just have to roll with it and see how we go.
And your tally of 732, is that a benchmark that you think anyone currently in the industry could challenge?
No, you know, records are there to be broken. So I'd love to think someone was either ballsy enough or, in my instance, dumb enough to have a go and, you know, put the time and effort into it. And if they're willing to, you know, have a crack at it and, you know, put everything on the line, like, you know, I'll put my hands down and say, you know, good luck sort of thing. And if you need anything, let me know and I'll help out, because, you know, I know what it takes. And, you know, and everyone else, you know, Rod Sutton, he helped me right through from the start of our preparation to, you know, that last sheep, you know, and he's held that record before and he knows what it takes. So I'll just be happy enough. to see someone have a go at it, but whether someone will or not is a different story.
That was Simon Goss, the new holder of the 9-hour strong wool ewe shearing record. What an achievement. We'll get to market shortly, but on the text line, Paul has been in touch saying it's very difficult to juggle fire management in national parks versus preserving ecology when fire has become more unpredictable and more frequent with climate change. But then Chris says this government needs to take a serious look at their policies on managing public land. We never experienced fires at this scale when there were grazing rights on public land to reduce fire fuel loads. Now with everything locked up, it's always up to us farmers and wildlife suffering, paying the ultimate price every year. Thanks for those messages. Markets now. First up, Bairnsdale Cattle with Brendan Fletcher.
G'day Angus. Numbers increased to 190. That's 100 more with most of the regular buyers present, but not all operating fully in a cheaper market. Quality was limited to a few pens, while cows and bulls made up most of the sale. The sprinkling of prime cattle sold to firm demand. Manufacturing steers and cows sold 20 to 25 cents cheaper, with processors loading cows for an estimated 760 to 789 cents a kilogram carcass weight. Heavy bulls sold firm. A pen of trade steers and heifers made 450, manufacturing steers 356 to 430, heavy grown heifers reached a top of 435, most light and medium weight cows 326 to 372, heavyweights 350 to 400, heavy bulls 422 to 440. This is Brendan Fletcher reporting for MLA.
Thanks, Brendan. To Hamilton Lambs now with Jenny Kelly.
3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Lamb numbers dropped back to 14,000 heads. Some handy fed lambs with weight, but a lot of plainer feeder and store types. Still not a lot of buyer interest in heavy lambs at $285 to a top of $328. And these sold 20 cents either side of $10 a kilo, although agents did say it was a better result than a week ago. Once on to neat trade lambs, there was a bit more buying energy with the supermarkets and west side in play. The best woolly 22 to 24 kilos from $234 to $260 at a ballpark cost of $10.45. The shorn trades $240 to $270. At the top end in the domestic run, there was some sweet southdown type lambs which got close to $11 a kilo. But overall, there was a lot of processing lambs from $10 to $10.70 today. Lighter lambs under 20 kilos were strong to dearer and looked to be making good money when compared to the heavy lambs at $170 to $235 a head at costs over $11 a kilo for a lot of them. Jenny Kelly for MLA.
Thanks, Jenny. Lastly for today, Horsham with Graham Pimer.
Both lamb and sheep supply halved on the last 2025 sale with 2,500 lambs and 650 sheep yarded, following a tough week for local communities. Quality was mixed and heavy lambs in short supply. Not all the regular buying group attended or operated fully. Lambs sold to steady demand with a large percentage going to feeders and restockers. Medium and heavy trade weight shorn lambs sold from $232 to $242. Heavyweight sold from $250 to $330. The unshorn lambs sold from $170 to $300. Restockers and feeders paid from $136 to $231 for shorn lambs and from $80 to $126 for the lighter weights. They paid $104 to $215 for unshorn lambs, $140 to $150 for Dorper lambs, and from $110 to $190 for Merino lambs. The smaller sheep offering sold to a smaller buying group at similar levels. Merino ewes made to $208, Merino Weathers to $218, Crossbred ewes to $230. Been Graham Pimer at Horsham for MLA.
Thanks for that, Graham. We're almost out of time, but we do have a minute for some of your texts. And Calvin at Murrayville, I think, echoing everyone's sentiments, saying he wants to give a big shout out to fire coordinators at the Vic Fire for doing a wonderful job in difficult circumstances. Yes, Calvin, there are those on the ground, aren't there? And then there are also those back in the incident control centres. So thanks for sending that one through. We spoke earlier about fuel reduction burn. Simon Grigg at Patchawalik says there's no fuel reduction being done in the national park west of Patchawalik. He says that's not good enough, and Ross has been in touch as well. Ross says Simon is spot on. Management of public land is appalling. Fuel reduction burns are essential in Victorian bushland. Then on the flip side, we had a call from Simon at Morwell. He was citing some scientists who argue that fuel reduction burns actually aren't that effective and that the regrowth burns more readily. But I won't delve into that debate with 20 seconds left to go on the country hour, but tomorrow we will spend a large chunk of the program talking about that topic, fuel reduction, and also particularly resourcing of CFA. A lot of debate around this week in political circles about CFA funding. Some people saying it's gone backward, the government arguing that it has improved year on year. That tomorrow, news time, 1 o'clock.